Hi, so thanks for all coming out. I'm Jonathan from the philosophy department. I'm going to be talking about the question of whether it's rational to be moral. And in particular, I'm going to talk about some of the kind of ways in which philosophers have approached this question. I think it's sort of one of the oldest questions in philosophy, and one of, I think, the great questions in philosophy. It's sort of vivid, one of the first points at which it's been discussed at great length in philosophy is in Plato's Republic. So it's the issue is sort of vividly raised there. So Plato's Republic is a dialogue, and so one of the characters in it, Glaucon, sort of raises this question by describing a certain story. So he describes the story of what's called the Ring of Gyges. So it's a kind of myth. So the idea is that there's a shepherd, Gyges, and he's watching over his flock. Suddenly a kind of storm breaks out and the earthquake opens up the ground next to him, and looking around he sees that in the hole there's a giant corpse. This corpse is wearing a gold ring. He takes this ring, he puts it on himself, and he kind of plays around, fiddles around with it a little bit, and he discovers that what this ring does is make him invisible. And he's quite excited about this, as you might imagine, and he kind of figures out how to sort of use this to his advantage. So what he does is he seeks out the king's wife, he seduces her. With her help, they then murder her husband, and he then takes the crown for himself. So the character in Plato's Republic, after describing this story, says "No one, it seems, would be so incorruptible that he would stay on the path of justice or stay away from other people's property, when he could take whatever he wanted with impunity, go into people's houses, kill or release from prison anyone he wished, and do all of the other things that would make him like a god among humans. Someone who didn't want to do injustice, given this source of opportunity, and who didn't touch other people's property, would be thought wretched and stupid by everyone aware of the situation." So Glaucon, this character in Plato's dialogue, he's sort of saying two things there. First of all, he's making this claim about what people would do. So it's, look, if you had the power to get away with doing whatever was best for you, and at the expense of anyone else, everyone would do that. If you could get away with being immoral, you would. But he's also making a second claim that that's the sensible thing to do. So he says anyone who didn't do that would be thought wretched and stupid. He's saying, it would be stupid not to use this power if you could do so. So we can take this to be sort of, and Glaucon takes this to be raising the question of, is it rational to be just in Glaucon's case? Is it rational to take other people's interests into account? If you can get away with being immoral, is there any reason not to do so? And so Glaucon, after describing this story, sort of challenges Socrates to try and show him that being a moral person is good for its own sake, not just for what it might get you. So take that to be a kind of vivid illustration of this sort of issue about this question of why be moral. We can also think of sort of less fantastical examples which bring out the same point. So we can think about the gangster who's on trial and who could get off by having one of the witnesses killed. If he could get away with that, you might think, well, why shouldn't he do that? Wouldn't that be the rational thing for him to do? Wouldn't that be what's in his interest to do? So wouldn't that be the sensible thing for him to do? We can also think of cases about, what if I find a lost wallet and I can get away with keeping the money inside it? Again, you might think, wouldn't that be the sensible thing for me to do? Why, presumably the morally right thing to do would be to return the wallet, but in a case in which I can get away with keeping the money for myself, what's there to be said for returning the wallet? So that's the kind of sort of question I have in mind by asking whether it's rational to be moral. I don't sort of want to get too hung up on the word rational in particular. I think you could kind of put this question equally in terms of, should I be moral, or do we have reasons to be moral? I guess I also don't, in a way, I don't want to get sort of too hung up on thinking about these things in terms of morality as such. Rather, you can just kind of think of these as, I'm going to sort of just use the term moral as just a kind of word to sort of sum up the kinds of examples I'm talking about. So if you like, you can just think about the concrete cases and just think, well, is there good reason to take other people's interests into account? Would there be good reason to return a lost wallet, even if I could keep the money instead and get away with that? So what I'm going to talk about is some ways in which philosophers have tried to address that question. So I think we should sort of think of the challenge as a kind of skeptical one, in the sense that I think typically we tend to assume that there is good reason to be moral, that other people's interests do matter to what we should do, that there would be a good reason to return the lost wallets, there is a good reason for the gangster not to have the witnesses killed. We can sort of dramatise this by thinking of the skeptic, or the moral skeptic, if you like, as someone who comes along and says, "Well, why should I do that? Why should I care about other people's interests? What's in it for me?" And so we can think of people trying to defend the rationality of morality as someone trying to kind of defeat, as it were, that skeptical challenge. And that means I think we can sort of divide sort of approaches to that question into two sorts. So one sort of way you might try and approach that problem is to try and convince the moral skeptic. So you have this character who's saying, what's in it for me? Why should I care about morality? Why should I care about taking other people's interests into account? And the aim would be to try and convince this person that he should in fact care about morality. He should in fact care about other people's interests. But there's also that's probably the approach that kind of most immediately springs to mind when you're thinking about this problem. But I think there's also another kind of approach that you might take, which is a bit more modest. So, as I say, if we're thinking of the challenge as a skeptical one, as someone trying to undermine something that we ordinarily think or take for granted, then it's maybe less important to, as well, convince the skeptic that he's wrong, as to just be able to undermine his arguments that we don't have reason to be moral. So rather than trying to convince him that he in fact should be moral, it might be enough just to be happy with our own responses to his arguments that we shouldn't be moral. And so that's a much more modest approach, because it's not aiming to convince the skeptic, it's just aiming to undermine the sort of arguments he gives against us. So I'll say a little bit about sort of both of those approaches. I'll start with the more ambitious one. So there's plenty of examples in philosophy of people trying to take this more ambitious route, trying to come up with some argument that, in effect, could, in principle, convince the person who doubts whether there's reason to keep promises or reasons to respect other people's property, that indeed he should. So one kind of popular and influential version of this idea is sort of follows a tradition from Thomas Hobbes, the 17th century English philosopher. And Hobbes' idea, and the idea of people sort of influenced by him, is to try and defend morality in terms of self-interest. So to try and show that actually morality and self-interest don't come apart. You might think that sort of what some of these examples show is that they can come apart, that sometimes it's not in our interest to do what's morally right. So one kind of way to approach that problem would be to try and show that's actually illusory, that actually it is best for us if we do what's morally right. So Hobbes put this by saying, well, the rules of morality, he thinks, are those that would be adopted by the far-sighted, prudent man concerned with his own survival, security, and well-being. So he's thinking, even if you're only out for yourself, even if you only care about your own survival, security, and well-being, still, you should comply with the rules of morality. You should still keep your promises in general. You should be truthful. You should not injure others, and so on. So why might we think that's true? How might we sort of try and go about defending that idea that some of these sorts of examples I've sketched can't really happen, or don't happen very often, at least? Well, I think there are a fair few things that Hobbes might say, and that people following Hobbes have said. So I think a point to emphasise is that we do typically depend on the cooperation of others. We depend on the cooperation of our friends, on our employers, on people whose work we rely on, indeed on strangers who we might ask for directions in the street. We just sort of wouldn't get very far in life without being able to rely on other people to a large extent. And we're also just not in general very good at concealing violations of morality, if you like. So if we did just kind of go, for most of us, if we did just sort of go around lying and cheating and stealing all the time, we wouldn't actually get very far, because you know, we need to cooperate with others, and we're not going to be able to cooperate with others if they know that we're just as likely to rip them off as to keep our promises to them, for instance. So because that sort of generally seems true, because we do depend on others to such a great extent, it seems like having a kind of standing policy, at least, of kind of generally speaking, keeping your promises, respecting other people's property, not hindering others, helping others where you can, seems like in the long run it might generally be good for you, because you'll be able to get these benefits of cooperating with others. Another sort of point that we can add to that is that most of us aren't sort of only concerned with our well-being and only concerned with our survival and security, as Hobbes puts it. Most of us, at least many of us, I think, do have at least some sense of sympathy with others. Most of us are pained by hurting others. We feel bad when we hurt other people. And indeed, we might sort of take pleasure from seeing other people do well. And those kinds of positive feelings and those kind of other regarding interests that most people have, or many people have, are also going to generate kind of reasons on purely sort of self-interested terms to do what's right. At least they're going to generate, if you understand the notion of interest in a broad enough way, as kind of things that you're interested in, then if you're interested in other people's welfare, then that's also going to mean that the choice that it's often going to make sense for you to help others and not hurt others, and so on. Another kind of point that Hobbes put a lot of weight on is that it seems plausible that sort of in the long run all of us would do better in as kind of narrowly self-interested terms as you like if we all accepted and acted on moral considerations than if we flouted them. So this sort of intuitive point here is that, look, a society in which people are truthful to each other, a society in which people respect each other's property, a society in which people don't just kind of feel free to go around and stab people as they're walking down the street, is a much nicer society to live in than the opposite, right? If you live in a society in which, you know, you do fear for your life every time you step out onto the street, that's not a nice place to live in. And it's not a lot, you know, for pretty much everyone. So basically, the thought here would be that, you know, all of us, at least the vast majority of us, would do better if we went along with moral considerations, because then we'd live in this kind of the preferable society. And so you might take, you know, those points in combination to support the idea that, well, actually, it's going to be harder than you might have thought to think of clear cases in which it's not in your interest to be moral. But generally speaking, it's going to make sense for us to take other people's interests and other people's rights into consideration. So that's the sort of broadly kind of Hobbesian way of trying to defend the idea that it is typically rational to be moral. So to sort of make a couple of comments about this, so I think a lot of these observations that the Hobbesian is making are true, they're important, they're worth emphasising. Nonetheless, you might sort of think that as a sort of general answer to the question that we started out with, they might seem a little unsatisfying. And I think that's really for sort of two main reasons. So first of all, you might sort of worry that it doesn't really address the question that we were asking in the first place. And it seems like the most that these sorts of observations could show is that, you know, for most of us, most of the time, it pays to be moral, as it were. It pays to take others' interests and rights into account. And so for most of the time, we'll have, if you like, reasons of self-interest to take other people's interests into account. But I take it that, what we kind of started off worrying about was precisely cases in which that's not the case. And the worry about whether we have good reasons to be moral seems most pressing sort of precisely in the cases in which it's just not in our interest to be moral, like in the example of the lost wallet or the gangster, or indeed Gyges with his magical ring. And this sort of Hobbes kind of style of strategy doesn't really resolve those cases. It just sort of says at most, well, they don't happen as often as you might have thought. And in a way, that just doesn't really answer the question. I mean, if Glaucon presented this example of Gyges in order to kind of get, because he wanted Socrates in the dialogue to tell him why being good or being just is good for its own sake, not just for what it can get you. And so if you think that a sort of proper vindication of morality should show what's good for its own sake about being moral, then appealing to self-interest in this way just seems like it's not gonna answer that question. Secondly, and relatedly, it's sort of natural to think that this kind of answer offers, in a way, the wrong kind of answer to the question. To the extent that it answers the question at all, it doesn't give the kind of answer we might have wanted. Because after all, we don't think of the person who is generally a morally decent person, but only for self-interested reasons, as a morally good person. So if someone is generally honest, if someone is generally respectful of others, if someone is generally keeps their promises and so on, but they only do that because they're worried about what will happen to them if they don't, then that you might think, okay, it's good that this person is doing the right thing, but they're not doing the right thing for the right reasons. And so we wouldn't think of them as, to that extent, they don't seem to be the ideal of kind of moral behaviour. And so insofar as this kind of Hobbesian strategy is only offering us sort of self-interested reasons to be moral, then we might think it's providing the wrong kinds of reasons to be moral. It's not providing the kinds of reasons to be moral that we might have wanted. So those are a couple of worries about that first strategy of trying to ground morality in self-interest. Let me say something sort of very briefly and kind of sketchily about a second kind of way in which some philosophers have tried to vindicate the thought that it is rational to be moral. And this strategy takes its inspiration from Immanuel Kant, an 18th century German philosopher. And his thought was, again, that we can kind of show, as well, on the skeptic's own terms, that it's rational to be moral. But he wants to do that not by, or some people following him have wanted to do that, not by trying to show that it's necessarily in your interest to be moral, but rather to try and show there's some kind of hidden inconsistency in acting immorally. So the thought is that anyone who's kind of capable of acting at all, anyone who has some degree of rationality, is somehow at least kind of implicitly committed to acting in morally acceptable ways. And so, it's going to turn out that the person who keeps the lost wallet, or the gangster who has the witness killed, is somehow kind of ultimately inconsistent or incoherent because they have this kind of at least implicit commitment to treating others equally. And so if we could show that to them, then they would, on pain of inconsistency, they'd have to admit that, okay, what I should be doing is the right thing, is returning the wallet or whatever. Now, as I say, that's a very kind of striking, very interesting idea. It's an idea that, sort of lots of work trying to develop this idea is I think very, very interesting, very important. I'm not really going to say too much about how exactly that might be developed. I mean, so one sort of possible way in which you might try to develop that idea is to argue that, well, if you only take your interests into account, if you only take your own interests into account, then you're sort of treating yourself as valuable in a way that you don't treat others as valuable. Your actions, as it were, are saying, you know, I matter, but other people don't. And you might think there's something arbitrary about that, unless you can kind of show that there is something special about you which isn't special about other people. And it's a bit hard to see, you know, seriously how that could be shown. So if that's right, then we could, you know, if, as were, the gangster or the person taking the wallet couldn't kind of provide some reason why they matter but other people don't, then that would be a sort of way of arguing that there is some kind of hidden arbitrariness or hidden kind of incoherence in what they're up to. So, like I say, I think this idea is very bold, very interesting. There's sort of a lot to be said about it, lots of ways of developing it, I think, are deep and important. But for present purposes, I'm going to be sort of quite quick with it and just sort of register a couple of worries why you might think that it's just ultimately it's not going to work out. So the first point to make is just to sort of emphasise what a sort of difficult project this is going to be. So on the face of it, it just looks like the idea of a sort of perfectly consistent immoralist, a perfectly consistent gangster or tyrant or whatever, just is a coherent possibility. It might be true that lots of us do indeed have, or indeed it is true that lots of us do have a commitment to morality and to the interests of others. And so it's true that lots of us would be inconsistent to just sort of reject or repudiate morality. But it doesn't seem like it's just impossible to imagine someone who is sort of genuinely only in it for themselves and genuinely does lack any commitment to morality. Again, you can kind of think of gangsters or tyrants or whatever. Such characters, I think, do seem appalling, but they don't seem obviously inconsistent. So it just looks like it's going to be very hard to show. No, really, they are ultimately inconsistent in some way. Secondly, there's also a worry about whether this sort of approach can supply the right kind of reasons to be moral. So when I was talking about Hobbes, they said, look, the person who's honest, but only because they're worried about what's going to happen to them, the sense in which they don't really count as an honest person. But you might think a similar kind of worry applies on this more sort of Kantian approach. So you might think, look, if someone's suffering and I can help them, then the reason to help that person is that person's suffering and I can help them. It's not, the reason to help them isn't that, you know, I'd be inconsistent if I didn't. It's not, the reason to help them isn't some fact about, you know, my kind of internal coherence. It's rather about, look, this person's in need and I can help them. So again, it looks like even if this strategy kind of could argue that, well, that you should help this person, it's not going to give us the right kinds of reasons to help that person. Okay, so I've now mentioned two kind of ambitious strategies for trying to defend the rationality of morality, if you like. And I've sort of raised a couple of worries about both of them. So I've raised a couple of worries about this strategy of trying to convince the skeptic on his own terms, trying to, as it were, get the skeptic to agree that, yeah, I should be morally good. But it also seems there's another option. So there's this more modest option of not trying to convince the moral skeptic on his or her own terms, but rather just trying to rebut any arguments that they offer against us. So as I've sort of tried to emphasize, it seems to me that, you know, we do tend to assume that there are reasons to be moral, that other people's interests matter. And I've sort of relied on that in arguing against the Hobbes and the Kant style approach. So if you sort of take that point seriously, I think the burden of proof gets thrown back onto the skeptic. So it's not, as it were, for us to try and convince the skeptic that he should be moral, it's rather for him to try and convince us that we're wrong to think that other people's interests matter. And so this more modest approach plays this more kind of defensive game of just trying to rebut any rebut arguments that might be given that try to show that it's not rational to be moral, that we shouldn't be moral, but doesn't try to sort of positively demonstrate to anyone that that it is rational to be moral. So as it were, it's not that we have to sort of try and bring the skeptic around to morality, we just need to be content with what we take to be good reasons for morality. Now, playing that defensive game, it's going to matter, well, what are the arguments that the skeptic might give? And I think that for all I've said so far, we haven't really seen any argument that we don't have reason to be moral. What we've seen is that there seems like there might be some cases in which it's not in our interest to be moral, that sometimes doing the right thing might involve a big sacrifice on my part. But the only way to argue from that point to the claim that, well, actually the rational thing to do is not be moral, would be to kind of rely on some kind of account or theory of what rationality is, which says something like, well, you only have reason to do what's in your interest. But and it's right, if you do make that assumption, if you assume that rationality is just a matter of pursuing your own interests, then of course it's going to be very hard to show that it's rational to be moral. But I think such an argument would also look not very convincing, because in a way part of what is at issue is whether rationality is only a matter of pursuing your own interest, or whether it also involves things like taking other people's interests into account. So I suggest that sort of the better strategy to take against, you know, a better approach to this question, why be moral, to take is to sort of play this more defensive game, as it were, and ask for arguments from the skeptic why we're wrong to think that morality matters, why we're wrong to think that it makes sense to be moral. And of course, that's hardly the end of the road. There are lots of things that the skeptic might say. But I think just sort of relying on the assumption that, well, rationality is just about pursuing your own interests seems like it just sort of begs the question in this context. What's more, just a kind of final thought. So I've sort of presented this kind of more modest strategy as it were, the easier one to pursue than the more ambitious strategy of trying to convince the skeptic that he's wrong. But I think there's a more kind of positive thing to say about the modest strategy too, which sort of kind of comes out of some of the things I said about Hobbes and about Kant. So we saw there that even if those strategies succeed to some extent, it seems like they might give the wrong kinds of reasons to be moral. So they give, for Hobbes, you should be moral because it's in your interest. For Kant, you should be moral because you'd be inconsistent not to. And I suggested, those just aren't going to be the right kinds of reasons to be moral. You don't count as a morally good person if you only do what's right because of your own interest or because you're worried about consistency. So if we sort of want to vindicate the thought that, look, yeah, we do know, you know, if you want to vindicate the thought that the reasons to be moral are the kind of things we ordinarily take to be reasons to be moral, i.e. like the fact that this person is suffering or the fact that I promised to do something, then it's hard to see how anything other than this sort of more modest strategy could help, because it seems like the more ambitious strategies are trying to find other reasons to be moral, not just, you know, the kind of ordinary reasons like that this person is suffering or whatever. So that seems to me to suggest that more modest strategy is not just that's the kind of easiest strategy to take, but it may be also the only one that actually captures this idea that there's something kind of worthwhile in itself about being moral. Okay, so that's it. Okay, any questions?